Hey, everybody. Just a quick note before we get started here. This episode is about a week old. It was supposed to air last weekend, but I had some power out issues here in Southern California where I live. And so I kept losing my work and having to start over again. And eventually I had to move on to the other work I had to do. But I did eventually get it done. So here it is. I hope you enjoy it. A couple of show notes. Next week, we are going to be discussing the Netflix series Beastars. And then the week after that, we are going to be doing our big Berserk show, where we review every single animated version of Berserk all at once, and then pick a winner. You can probably already tell who the winner is going to be, but anyway, just wanted to point out what's all been happening and what to look forward to, and thank you all sincerely, as always, for listening to AnCast.
Wow! There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring do and stuff like you would never see.
Hey, a podcast!
Yeah, we're gonna be a podcast!
Starring everybody
and me. There'll be heroes bold, there'll be comedy, and a lot of fuss that ends for us real happily.
Hey, a podcast!
We can hear it all develop,
starring everybody
and me. We'll take the world and set it on its ear.
Come on, join in.
We're gonna start right here.
Hey, everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. Lindsay Leverage is here.
Hey, guys.
How's it going, buddy?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah. See went any? To the movies.
Yeah, you went to the movies, right? We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything good lately?
I finally watched that psychological thriller movie, Horse Girl, on Netflix with Alison Brie.
Briefly. What is that about?
Okay, not so much about horses, although there is a horse.
Do you mean like she has her throat is bugging her?
No, horse like, you know, yeah, one of those girls who had horse folders and binders in school, horse girl.
Yeah, no, I knew.
But also, yeah, had a horse. No, it's actually a pretty empathetic view of mental illness that I thought was good. You know, usually that kind of stuff is played up for like shock value, whatnot, but you end up really kind of seeing it from her perspective because she's having like a psychotic break, right, and is losing touch with reality. But it ends up being really kind of almost heartfelt with it. But yeah, also really weird. Really weird. So, yeah, you know, if you want kind of a weird trip, it's like 90 minutes and it kept me interested the whole time.
90 minutes.
Hey, that's your favorite number for a movie, isn't it?
Yeah. But here's a big question for Netflix. Anything Netflix, my big question for anyone is always like, am I going to fall asleep on the couch or will it capture my interest?
Uh-huh.
Which one do you think it'll be?
It'll capture your interest.
Okay. All right.
Although I also didn't fall asleep watching The Irishman like all the way through. So maybe it's nothing like that movie. I'm just saying that I sat there for 3 hours and didn't fall asleep somehow.
What
so.
A comparison. speaking of movies, so I asked you to go see the Disney Pixar film Onward.
Onward!
Which came out yesterday. And, I don't know what your history with this stuff is, but, you know, speaking as a, you know, I have been described as a Disney otaku. Which
yeah.
At this point is like, it's like a scarlet letter.
Yeah. Just a cursive D,
well,
right there.
You know, old habits die hard. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I would always go see every Pixar movie the day it came out. And like, it was like an appointment viewing, right? Like,
yeah.
I got to see it.
Yeah.
I just can't quit. I can't stop. So even though this one looked fairly uninteresting.
Yeah.
I was like, well, better get opening night tickets for the first show. I asked you to go see this. Mm-hmm. And you did. And
I did.
I'm curious what you thought of the film Onward. Which, okay. Well, actually, first, let's get into a little bit about like what the film's actually about.
Sure. So
this is an attempt at sort of Zootopia-ing Dungeons & Dragons creatures. So it's like elves and cyclopses and dragons and manticores and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. they live in a society that mirrors ours, so they have smartphones and make jokes about memes and stuff. And it, you know, it mirrors human society pretty much. And Zootopia is a little bit more about politics.
Yeah.
This was not. But basically, like, it's two kids without a dad who are like just about 16. Like, in the past, there was magic, but now there isn't. Everyone just has smartphones and watches TV. Which there was like a drop of a concept in there,
mm-hmm.
and I got what they were going for. So they don't have a dad, and they're trying to resurrect their dad using magic from the old days, and it, you know, goes places.
Notably, no one loses any limbs in this process.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not Full Metal Alchemist. But it doesn't quite go as planned, and so then they have to go on a quest, as they say, to get a MacGuffin that will help them resurrect the rest of their dad, because they only resurrect his legs.
Yeah.
And that's like a joke that lasts for the entire fucking movie.
Yeah.
And that's basically it. Like, that's pretty much it. I gotta be honest, I didn't get anything out of this thing.
Mm.
I thought it was just paced.
Yeah.
Just bland gruel. Like, not a bad movie. Like, I didn't hate it.
Mm-hmm.
But it just felt like a lot of stuff now, it feels like it's designed for you to just fall asleep.
Mm.
It's designed for you to, like, be on your third glass of Chardonnay on a Disney cruise ship. And you're like, yeah, whatever. You just don't care.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know, man. How did you feel about it?
So, my take on it was probably a little more favorable for... I took my son to see it, who, you know, I've kind of dragged him along to all of these so far. Like, as long as we're going to have to go see, like, a PG movie that's out on opening day, I'm like, I'll take him after school and we'll go to the movies. So I took Eric.
Does he like going to the movies?
Yeah. Oh, Eric loves movies.
Great. Okay.
And he's still very much into, like, cartoon comedies. So, you know, that's kind of, like, his preferred stuff. You know, he like really liked Secret Life of Pets, for instance, which, you know,
well, there's no accounting for taste.
He's 10. What do you want from him?
I'm just over here criticizing your son's taste in cartoons.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you can write him a strongly worded letter or something. Yeah.
Anyway,
Eric, I've read your review and I gotta so anyway, I took him to go see it, and you know, he is also an older brother. And so I think there were things going on in the movie that I felt like I could relate to a little more as far as the family dynamic of it. You know, you have the two brothers. One can use magic and is kind of like a scaredy cat. And the older one is compensating for not seeing his dad in his last moments. And, you know, they're trying to go on an adventure together, and it's going to bring the younger one's personality out, so he's not so scared to be himself, which is, you know, yeah, that's pretty blasé cartoon movie moral, be yourself, believe in yourself sort of stuff. But there were some genuinely, like, touching moments that I liked in it. And there were some of the jokes I thought were good. I liked the Pixie Biker Gang. I thought was cute, funny, whatever.
No.
I liked that whole bit.
No.
You're like, no.
I was just like, not funny. What's next? Also, interesting parallel between this movie and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Uh-huh.
Both have fight scenes in biker bars.
That's true. Well, yeah. Biker gas station type situations or whatever. You know, I liked the van in general, but my biggest complaint about the movie is, like, it has, like, nothing like as far as the soundtrack, like, no, like, I felt like it would be an opportunity to kind of do something, Guardians of the Galaxy-esque, just because of some of the mood of the film, but like,
and it also stars Chris Pratt.
The
thing is, though, is that when they, because there are a few moments where they have like recognizable songs, and I was like, wait, so are they on like, are there humans? Are they on, because does that band just exist in this universe? Like, how did they get, like, that's a stupid, like,
I would suspend my disbelief for that. They have two moons. It's definitely like not Earth, but
it's a stupid like CinemaSins style complaint. But it did. I was like, well, wait. So how did they? Well, anyway.
What recognizable songs did you pick up on? Because I didn't notice any.
The mom's ringtone.
Oh well, yeah, that's Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, it's Marvin Gaye. It's like, so I suppose Marvin Gaye exists, and anyway,
he should.
Well, yeah, sure. So we were going to list our top before we get into the news here. We were going to list our top five Pixar movies. But before we do that, before this movie, it comes attached with a cartoon at the front.
Yeah, like a lot of Pixar movies do, right?
Yes. But it starts with Disney welcomes the Simpsons.
God.
Which I, speaking as a member of, like, I'm at the tail end of Gen X. Like, I am, like, straddling the line between Gen X and Millennial.
Mm-hmm.
But as someone who grew up on The Simpsons, who, like, that show, like, for a lot of people in the 90s seasons, basically formed my sense of humor.
Yeah.
You know, it was, like, The Simpsons, Conan O'Brien, Mystery Science Theater, all that stuff in the 90s basically sort of made me who I am. And it will never stop being fucking weird to me that Disney owns The Simpsons.
Yeah.
The short was not memorable, wasn't very interesting, kind of weird, sort of suggested that the baby fucks, which is screwed up. Anyway, but
it also like couldn't settle on its, right, because it's trying to be a Simpsons short, so it has like adult, quote-unquote adult humor hidden in there.
Yeah, but it's all just on signage. Like,
yeah, so it's like, oh, well, you know, we haven't lost our edge as long as you can read, I guess.
Yeah, and there's, well, and like, listen, I don't like New Simpsons at all. I haven't watched a show in a long time. I do like watch the old seasons, like maybe two through about nine as like comfort food stuff. Like, I'll put it on in the background. I'll always love those, but New Simpsons looks weird and isn't funny, so I don't watch it. But the funny thing to me about this was I noticed right away that none of the other characters had speaking lines.
Yeah.
So there's, you see Marge and Homer and everything, but they don't say anything.
Yeah.
And so I lean over to my friend who I've seen the movie with, and I'm like, the thing I'm really waiting for is to see if literally any other voice actor has any lines in this thing. And it turned out, no, they didn't.
Yeah.
And this is funny because Disney welcomes the Simpsons. Their first short is like specifically, okay, so famously the Simpsons voice cast is the most expensive voice cast in history to get. Like they're extremely, they have really solid contracts, like rock solid, and they make a tremendous amount of money. So if you're going to pull them in for something like this, it's going to cost you. So I was just sitting there waiting, like, I bet you they're not going to have any lines. And they didn't. Weird. Super weird.
Not like Disney doesn't have the money, but
well, yeah, but you know how these companies
are. like, oh, we don't want to pay for this, it'll just all be from the baby's perspective, who also doesn't talk, so
we can just use the same sound effect over and over again. Anyway, so that was weird. So briefly we were going to run down our top five Pixars. Now, a lot of people this is a hard choice to make.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of really good ones and a lot of paste. But I'm just going to run them down real quick.
Sure. Right?
So number five, Toy Story 3.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly for that scene at the end where they all face their own inevitable deaths. Number four, Coco, which when I first saw it, I actually didn't really react to it very much.
Mm-hmm.
But on repeat viewing, turned out to be, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Number three, Ratatouille. Uh-huh. Which, in my opinion, still has the best scene. It's still number one, Brad Bird's best film. And number two, the Anton Ego character's moment where he eats the ratatouille and he flashes back to his childhood and then it comes back forward. Mm-hmm. And it also has the quote, like, the role of a critic is to embrace the new.
Mm.
I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that. Number two, Inside Out, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, there's this funny old meme where it's like, what if toys had feelings? What if monsters had feelings? What if feelings had feelings? It's sort of the formula for Pixar stuff.
Yeah.
That movie makes me cry every single time. I think it's a pretty wonderful articulation of, you know, how your emotions work. I it's really, really good, and it's solidly put together. Like, it's a great movie. And then, of course, number one, with a bullet, WALL-E.
Yeah.
Easily their best fucking movie. Easily their best movie. Again, makes me cry every single time. Opens with this very artistic, like, there's no dialogue in the first, like, 10 minutes of that movie.
Yep.
WALL-E basically saves humanity and brings them back to Earth to find themselves again. And then the closing credits are a complete visual history of art.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, well, I love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are yours?
Okay, so mine, I have two on here that you didn't pick, but, and the first one is my number five, and this is less the film, more personal attachment of what I associate with the film. So, Cars.
Oh, geez.
I know.
I'm hanging out.
But
no, it's all right.
But my son, who we've already established might have questionable taste, it was his favorite movie from like 2 to 3. There was a day I watched that movie with him like 3 times.
Oh my God.
And I still have a lot of the like script like memorized. Yeah, so, I mean, you would think that, oh, well, you must hate that movie. Like, it was like, you know, battered into you. But I just associate with my kid being really young. And he had like a Lightning McQueen diecast car that he used to take with him everywhere. So it just like, for me, it's like, aw, like mom moment sort of movie.
Sure.
And it's not awful.
The first one is actually fine.
We're not talking about the sequels here at all.
Yeah, no, the first one's fine. I take no issue with it. And I actually really like the beautiful landscapes in that movie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Having grown up around that, in an environment like that, like, they really, mm-hmm. they nailed it. And and the Cars ride at Disneyland is great. So
yeah,
there you go.
And then my next one is WALL-E, which again I really liked.
Too low.
Sorry. My next one is WALL-E, and it's for the robot design. Even though WALL-E himself it doesn't talk much in the movie, doesn't have the ability, you really like connect with him as like a character, like as this adorable robot character who's like, you know, trying to find his first real friend. And then also, you know, it gets into some environmental themes that I think, yep, are really good.
Mm-hmm.
My next one is Up, and that's mostly just for the opening sequence, which is probably the most memorable part of the movie.
I love that movie too. I feel like it kind of falls apart in the third act when they're like in, mm-hmm. in a biplane being chased by dogs in a biplane. Like,
yeah,
it just kind of gets really silly. But
yeah, it does get really silly.
The first two thirds of it are excellent. And that was the last in a string of wonderful original movies that they made in the mid to late 2000s.
Yeah. The whole opening thing. With his relationship with his wife, like, I will openly sob, like, ugly cry every single time.
Yeah.
Which is probably why I haven't revisited it in a while, because it's just very emotionally intense.
Yeah.
Number four is Coco, and that's just because I felt like it was a real celebration of
I think you're on you're on number three.
I did Cars, WALL-E, Up, Coco.
That would put you at number two, wouldn't it?
Two. Okay, I'm counting.
Are you counting down or up?
Well, I'm counting down.
Okay.
This is my fourth entry, and it's number two.
Okay.
Sorry, everyone, that's very confusing.
Yeah,
I didn't put numbers next to these. I am counting down.
I'm not going to edit any of that out. I'm just going to leave it all in there.
Yeah, all right. As long as everyone understands what I'm doing by the end, we can just... Yeah. Okay, so my number two is Coco.
And that's because I love the color design in it, especially for, you know, when they cross over to the other side. And that sort of celebration of death not being the end and how important your ancestors are. I just love, and the music. I love the whole movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Great film.
Yeah, and then my number one is Inside Out.
Yeah.
For just for articulating, like you said, emotion, but, you know, also the specific feelings of moving into adolescence are really relatable. And, you know, leaving behind, sometimes moving on from your interests as a child. God, like that whole part with the elephant thing.
Yeah, oh boy, bing bong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big, big mood.
Yeah, that's a rough one.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really good. An interesting thing about that movie that always occurs to me is that they show inside the emotions, the little girl, her characters are, her little, you know, emotional characters are, they're gender neutral.
Mm-hmm.
But then you go inside the mom's head and they're decidedly women. And you go inside the dad's head and they're decidedly men.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's an interesting wrinkle. And I think that was intentional to show that, well, you know, or maybe not, but that's a good, like, well, you're still developing. You'll decide who you are later.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So good. So good.
Yeah. They worked with, like, scientists or something, too, with coming up with that whole system in the film. I think it's in the credits that they actually, like, consulted with.
Yeah, they consulted with a lot of like psychologists and everything for that. Like, a lot of people would call Coco their last great movie. I would call Inside Out their last great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Coco was their last really good one.
Yeah,
like I would sort of put them in that order.
Yeah,
they're both excellent, but Inside Out was their last. Like, wow, you nailed it. In my opinion.
I have a genuine interest in Soul when that comes out.
Oh, that's a Pete Docter. And he directed a lot of Pixar's best movies. And he's basically the new John Lasseter at Pixar.
Yeah, without the touching.
Yeah, without the sex pest stuff.
Yeah.
He's the new sort of John Lasseter. And interestingly, the last time there were two Pixar movies in a single year, it was Inside Out and The Good Dinosaur.
No one remembers The Good Dinosaur.
They buried The Good Dinosaur. It came out 2 weeks before a little film called Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah, both Disney movies.
Yeah.
It's like, let's sweep this one under the rug. It feels like that's kind of what they're doing with Onward, where it's like, it's okay, I suppose, but we've got a real special one coming up. At least I hope.
Yeah.
At least I hope it's special. Because I've sat through so many shitty Pixar sequels at this point that, like, it would be nice to have something special. That would be cool. All right, so what's in the news, buddy?
All right, so if for some reason you have not gone to see Promare yet, you will have yet another opportunity to go see it. It's coming back to theaters in the U.S. next month. April 7th and April 8th, one subtitled, one dubbed. So I don't know if you listen to this podcast or you like Trigger, but you still somehow have not seen Promare. You can still see it in theaters. It's a good time. So,
well,
go.
I think it's more like you get the chance to see it again.
Oh, that's also true. Will you go see it again, you think?
Well, I already pre-ordered the Blu-ray.
Oh, right.
Which is coming out in May. But yeah, I might go see it again.
They're adding the, you know how they have those little shorts?
Yeah, which I haven't seen those yet, so I might just go do that.
Yeah, they're going to have both of them this time. When I went to see it, they had the Gallo short, but they didn't have the Leo one. This time, they're going to have both.
Yeah, I'll probably go.
Yeah.
I don't need an excuse to watch that movie.
Yeah. Another thing, I haven't gotten to play this yet, but the Final Fantasy VII Remake demo is out.
So,
yes.
Normally, you would probably expect me to say, like, well, I did, but I haven't, because I'm already going to buy the fucking game. So I'm not going to play 3 or 4 hours of it before I have to play those same 3 or 4 hours of it again.
Yeah.
In like a few weeks. It's not that far out. And I'm always like this with demos, like unless I can, especially with a game like that. If it's just like an action game, like a, you know, something that's not story driven, yeah, sure, I'll try your demo. But if I'm already sold It's kind of like watching trailers and clips of a movie you're already going to go see. And then you go see it, and then you have, okay, I've seen this part already. Like, I don't want to... It wouldn't ruin it for me. It's just like, unless I can transfer the save data.
Yeah, and even then, it's like, well, you've played it for a couple hours, but now you can't continue it for, like, several months or something?
Well,
it's coming out on April 10th now, so I guess it wouldn't be that long.
It's about a month away. It's not...
Yeah.
Like, I'll probably give in.
I'm going to download it after I'm done with work today and play it this weekend.
Yeah, sure. All right. Yeah. Well, you can tell me about it next week. But, like,
yeah.
I think I'm going to abstain. I think I'm going to...
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to try.
Yeah, I might send you much of annoying texts until you cave. Sure.
I'll probably give in. But, like, I already am going to buy the game. I don't need, like, a four-hour trailer for it. I don't need that.
They've got some giant deluxe edition stuff coming out, too, that makes it... I don't know which one I want to get. Like, they come with art books or CDs, and then there's all the DLC stuff that they're going to get me on, like Cactar.
Oh, yeah. They're going to milk you dry.
Yep. Carbuncle.
For sure. Yeah, the creature designs in it are a little weird, but... Whatever. It's just
did they just do complete redesigns from what they looked like in the original? Do they not match that?
No. Well, they're just... I mean, nothing really looks like it did in the original.
Well, yeah, like, yeah.
It's like super high-res versions of that stuff. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I'm excited. Like I said, I'm excited about it, but I'm at the point, and it's my same attitude towards movies. Just give me the product. Just give me the game. I don't need more promotional stuff. You sold me... Like, you had me at hello, just give me the fucking thing.
Just put it on my hard drive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the last one, there's been some weird anime-related shakeups in Australia.
Yeah,
lately.
I read about this.
Separate ones within, like, a two-week period, I guess, both involving politicians. The first one that happened was a senator. His name is Sterling Griff, and he was just big mad about the ratings on anime series because they were, in his opinion, more lenient than other media and, in his opinion, deserve a higher rating or would be outright banned based on Australian criteria. Now, in fairness, what he watched was Arrow Manga Sensei, which I've only seen the first episode of, and that was all I needed to see of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he found the content to be awful and heavily featuring incest themes, which not really, where's the lie? So he kind of called out the classification board, who responded and said, you know, we're doing this under the same criteria as live action series and live action, you know, movies. If you want to look into this more with us, we welcome you to do it. So I don't think it'll go anywhere, but it definitely got a lot of attention on the internet, his statements. And then the next week, the Fair Work Commission, which I don't know what the American equivalent to this would be, but they're supposed to basically oversee fair working conditions and like industrial disputes and stuff like that for the their government agency.
Yeah, we don't have one of those.
We don't have one of those. If we did, it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway, he got in trouble because he had like a collection of 20 figures, some of which were anime and some of which were quote unquote scantily clad or erotic in his office. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of his coworkers were like, hey, maybe not. And he did eventually remove them, but he also installed a security camera in his office without advising anyone, which you can't do. So anyway, he might get removed from office, but.
So this is all basically a moot point.
I guess so. It's just like, this is a thing that happened, and wow, that's kind of weird.
Every now and then a politician tries to make hay out of something like that, and it's usually for personal gain, and then everyone gets all in a big uproar over it, and is like, no, actually, you know, the same keyboard warriors come out of the closets, and, well, not so much, but the keyboard warriors come out in droves, and start ranting and raving about how actually they're, you know, borderline pornographic anime is actually art, you know, whatever. But it's just, we've seen this so many times over and over again. There's,
yeah,
it feels like there's always going to be a politician who's like, this is actually the devil, you know,
right?
Like, you know, like what's his face with video games back in the 90s. And
yeah. Oh yeah. And we had some of the video game stuff all the way up to 2000s and whatnot.
Yeah. It's always a thing. Yeah. When I saw it, I was like, "Eh, all right, he's trying to make a name for himself, but it's probably not going to go anywhere." Like,
yeah,
and it seems like it didn't.
Probably not. You'll probably still be able to get your anime without jumping through any extra hoops in Australia. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's pretty much that's. Oh no, I'm forgetting the big one. Anime Japan got canceled.
I'm really curious to see how this is going to impact the industry itself, because one of the fears that a lot of these big shows have, like Anime Japan and E3, is that if it gets canceled and it turns out the companies get what they want PR-wise anyway by just releasing all the shit themselves, then they're going to be like, oh, well, why are we spending millions of dollars? Because it's expensive to exhibit at those shows. So... like, that is, the concern is really on the side of the event, not the industry. Because the industry can just go on Twitter and say, we're doing a thing.
Or yeah, they can just update the official website for their series.
Or release a video on YouTube or something. I mean, Nintendo largely does this. They don't even, like, they don't physically, like, they have a big exposition at E3, but it's a booth. And that costs millions of dollars, but their actual presentation is just Nintendo Direct. They haven't suffered from that at all. Sony has largely pulled out of most of these events. They're not doing E3 this year either, even though they have a new console out this year. So it's getting a little dicey with some of these big trade shows, where it turns out that the benefit is mostly the people running the show, not the exhibitors or the attendees. Like, I understand if you're, you know, really excited to play 10 minutes worth of the next Zelda or something at a standing in line for 6 hours at a in a line to get it, you know, put your hands on a controller and look at a thing that you were already gonna buy. But
right,
I guess I understand that, but it is starting to look like this stuff is increasingly sort of irrelevant. And the danger here, I think, is mostly for the people who run the events, not really anyone else. Not really.
Yeah. I don't know that any series or companies are getting more hype for their product because they're at these events necessarily. I mean, they have to come in and bring like merchandise to get people to show up in the first place. It's like, oh, well, you know, if come by our booth, you get this, that and this. But otherwise, all the information is stuff that's going to be on the internet within 24 hours. And if you weren't there, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't. And you're absolutely right. Like, a lot of what drives sales is exclusive merchandise. The whole model is kind of falling apart here a little bit when you think about it too much.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it other than, oh, well, we've always had Anime Japan. Well, we haven't. It used to be Tokyo Anime Fair, but...
yeah, I remember that fight.
Yeah. Well, we need this in order to promote a new Bleach thing. No, you don't need Anime Japan to promote a new Bleach thing. You could just put out a YouTube video and a couple of tweets and everyone would get excited and then it would come out. And
yeah, a lot of these companies, they also do Twitter campaigns when their new series is coming out. Oh, take a picture of this with this hashtag. You're entered into a lottery to possibly win XYZ. And you don't have the staff don't have to do any of the preparation or any of the costs that it would to go to a big trade show. And then you're like pushing social media engagement for whatever it is that you're trying to get people to watch. And
which
you mail out some stuff in the end.
Yeah. Which it feels like the only thing anyone really pays attention to anymore is social. So,
yeah.
I do think this is threatening the health of that industry. I am a little surprised that it was subsequently announced that Anime Expo will continue. Like, it's just gonna, we're gonna do it, even though California currently has declared a state of emergency. So,
yeah.
Will that hold? Do you think that'll hold?
I am not a pathologist for diseases, so I mean, but from what I've read,
okay, I know that.
For anyone who is listening, I'm not a scientist, but yeah, no. What I've read is that they assume that the cases will go down once the summer months hit due to temperature and how that makes you more inclined to get lung infections and or not. So this could blow over once it warms up. I guess that's the thought. I'm sure that the staff are going to keep monitoring things. They still have plenty of time to cancel still before July. So I really don't know. We have seen other conventions in the United States, like a smaller one in New York just canceled. I don't remember what it was called, but there's that game one.
Oh, you're talking about Game Developers Conference.
Yeah, the Game Developers Conference. GDC. Yeah, so I mean, that was canceled. Facebook canceled their big thing that was going to be in California, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. I mean, so yeah, there are things that are being canceled. I guess Anime Expo is just crossing their fingers that come July, this isn't a thing anymore. I'm trying personally not to get like too panicky, but I don't have a lot of faith in what the United States is doing to alleviate the spread of the disease. So yeah it's
you know, speaking of someone who like wouldn't, if I got it, I wouldn't die from it.
Yeah, same.
You know, I'm not that worried about it. But I have noticed, like, you know, everyone is doing the elbow touch thing.
Mm-hmm.
At the movies last night, I noticed everyone was doing that.
Okay.
Yeah, it was interesting. I'm not scared of it, so I guess I don't care that much. But mostly I'm interested in seeing how it impacts these big events.
And whether that has an overall effect.
The fallout from that and what that would actually do. Because, you know, especially an event like E3, you've already got people deciding this is not worth it. So it can only damage it further. And if AJ goes away for a year, well, which it is, and the companies are all like, oh, it turns out we didn't need that anyway.
Right. Yeah, that will be interesting to see. Because if we didn't have Anime Expo for a year, how does that affect, I don't know, economy in the area versus the actual people at the event, you know, the industry and Artist Alley folks and stuff like that.
Yeah, we'll see.
I would assume that it would have a larger effect on sales for the independent artists and stuff who go there and try and sell things at their booth versus Viz and stuff like that. But I don't know. I don't know how much money they make in the dealer's hall and if it would be a big loss for them not to be there.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, so we haven't... Not that much anime lately, you know, like a little bit, but not that much.
Yeah, it's a full season, but not a whole lot really grabbing at me.
But both of us are reviewing a show this season, and I am not caught up on the one that one of the two you've been doing two.
Yes, I have been doing two, but only one is worth talking about.
Yeah, pulling double duty.
Yeah.
The one that you've been watching that I am really curious to hear about is Smile Down the Runway, which, what episode is that? Is it 8 or 9 or something like that?
There's one out today, Friday, that I haven't got to yet because we're doing this. But yeah, we're at episode 9.
Okay, so how is the show going?
It's interesting. It definitely keeps you hooked from episode to episode. Because there's a lot of character drama, twists. They really like pack a lot of the plot in every episode, but surprisingly, not that much about actual fashion, which I was a little disappointed to find out as someone who marathoned a lot of Project Runway back in the day. So,
were you were hoping for more of a focus on fashion?
Yeah, I was hoping for more fashion. I thought it would probably be interesting because the Japanese fashion scene is distinctly different and varied compared to a lot of the things you see in like Paris runway and whatnot. And so I thought I might actually have an opportunity to learn about some of the differences between that. You know, maybe they'll have like one character that's very into kawaii fashion and one character who's very into mori fashion or something. But it hasn't really done that.
Right. So what is the show doing?
Instead, the show seems to be about Ikuto, who's the main character, and he comes from, by Japan standards, a large family. He has three siblings. His mother is ill, his father is not there, and he really wants to be a fashion designer, but they're living a paycheck-to-paycheck sort of life. So that puts him at odds with a lot of his peers, who are either, you know, they've got a silver spoon in their mouth, like one of the characters' grandma already has a huge fashion line. The co-protagonist, Chiyuki, who wants to be a model, her dad owns a talent agency. So a lot of the other characters already have the money or influence to pursue this dream, but Ikuto doesn't have that. So it's more about his struggles to be acknowledged and to work it towards his dream despite not having the same resources.
That sounds pretty good, though. Like, I like that angle on it. But of course, you're saying it just doesn't really gel.
It's just not what I expected initially. I think it's still a good show if you want character drama and a lot of twists. It never lets anything sit still for too long. There's always something new to happening in the episode, and it's not. Also not afraid to really show how ugly the industry can be, both if you want to be a model or if you want to get into fashion design. So I appreciate that it's not glossing all of that over just to make, like, boy, we'll achieve his dreams sort of goal. But yeah, I'd still like some more clothes in it. I'd like to get a better sense of what, like, Ikuto's fashion ideas are, you know, what he wants to put into the things that he creates, as well as the other characters, because you can really compare and contrast their points of view and stuff through the art that they want to create this way. So it's not really doing that part so much. I'd like to see more of that.
Right. So you'd prefer it be a little bit more technical, basically.
Maybe a little more technical, or I mean, I don't expect it to break down all the different kinds of stitching or things like that. It does make a couple mentions of those early on. And honestly, that kind of technical stuff would go over my head. I don't sew, so I don't actually know that part of it. But as far as, like, design sense or general, like, I don't know, I just want to see a little bit more clothes, I guess.
Well, okay. All right, but if that's not really what the show is actually about, then, you know, is that a reasonable expectation? I can't tell.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, so they introduced a competition part of the show, which is where I would have expected to see some, you know, actual designs. And they only have them make for the competition, like Barbie size clothes for it. But I mean, that's still pretty interesting. They had, you know, one of the girls' designs had, you know, leather lace kind of mock up that was pretty cool. And then Ikuto made pajamas for that. Which was a little, huh. He explained it, though, in the episode, and I thought it was pretty smart, because they're trying to make a design for a model, right? So imagine you've got to, like, make an outfit for Tyra Banks or something. And so he goes through her social media feed to see what she usually wears when she's not doing a shoot, to get a sense of what her style is and what kind of clothing she puts on her social media. And then he sees that there's, like, a gap there. She never puts any Instagram photos up of herself in her pajamas. So what if I made her pajamas that felt stylish enough that she'd want to take a picture in them for Instagram? Well, that was his line of thinking. And I thought that was interesting, even if I hated the pajamas that he designed. So, you know, but that's more of a taste thing. That's not a critique of the show.
Sure.
But yeah, but it keeps things pretty interesting. You know, he's trying to figure out how to stand out, but also what kind of concessions does he have to make due to his financial situation, what people are going to try and take advantage of him through his financial situation, which is how we get our first sort of enemy in the show, or antagonist, I should say. It's a guy named Ito, and he's the one with the grandma that I mentioned earlier, and he wants to launch his own line, and he wants to launch it at this big festival where they're going to have, you know, a runway show at the school of design that he goes to. And Ikuto doesn't go to the school, but he's able to compete as sort of a special situation case, as they do in these kind of shows. And when his mother gets really sick and they get a big hospital bill for her surgery, Ito comes in and he's like, well, I'll give you the money, but you have to be my pattern maker. And also, by the way, you're no good at any of this. You know, just tries to demoralize him and also use money as a way to
basically get his competition to drop out and buy him off to work for him instead.
Hmm.
Which I thought was kind of interesting. I mean, I thought it was kind of interesting. It seems sort of real to life. Yeah. There's the sort of things that you might have to deal with when you're pursuing your dream, but you're financially hard up. You're in this.
Yeah, like, well, but it feels like that's what the story's actually about.
Yeah. Yeah. And
you were just you were just hoping for more clothes.
I was just hoping for more clothes. A little bit more clothes. Not a whole lot, because I like what they're doing with the character plot and drama. Also, I thought it was going to be a little more even. The story would be more evenly between the two protagonists. Chiyuki, who's the model that's short, but she wants to walk the Paris runway, versus Ikuto, who wants to design clothes. But Chiyuki's really taken a back seat. Maybe I should have expected that, though. This is a manga that ran in a shonen magazine.
That was obvious to me from the first episode.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I was like, oh, the main character is this guy. Yeah, like, mm-hmm. That's obviously where they're going with this. Mm-hmm. So, like, the model, the I want to be a model character is like, oh, okay, you can already kind of tell. Even just in the first episode, you can just kind of tell. It's like, this one's going to be sort of... sitting in the passenger seat, and the other one's going to be driving. Story-wise, as a metaphor. But yeah,
they have switched over to her perspective a few times for like longer segments, and I've liked that, because in the first episode she kind of seemed like a bitch with her nose in the air, but she's really changed her personality to be less spoiled, and you can see how hard she has to kind of work this side hustle to be even considered in the same league as the taller models. So they've had a couple segments on that, which have been really interesting, where she's got to swallow her pride or, you know, find ways to stand out in photo shoots where she's relegated to the back. So, yeah, it's a good show. I really recommend it.
That is not the impression I got from you.
Really? No, I think the character drama is really good. I think the plot moves at a really good pace. I just would like a little bit more clothing, but that's just for, you know, my own enjoyment. It's not... I don't really see it as a detriment to the show. It's just like the one thing I would like some more of.
It's the Lindsay asterisk.
Yes. Asterisk Lindsay would like a little bit more clothes in the fashion show, but that's okay.
Oh, man. So I've been writing about a show called Keep Your Hands Off Aza Ken.
Oh, man.
Easy breezy, my friend.
Yeah.
Easy breezy. I don't want to overstate it, but...
Can you overstate Aza Ken?
I don't think I can overstate it. It's not over yet, but I'm telling you, man, this might replace Evangelion as my favorite show.
You were telling me that earlier, and I can't believe that you... I mean, it's not that it doesn't deserve all the accolades that you're about to give it, but that is big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, contextually, if you put it into full context... So now, this is a show that is basically about love of animation. I've spent my whole life loving animation.
Right.
Nothing else that I've ever seen articulates that love in such a specific way like this does. I've never seen anything do it before.
Yeah.
And it's fucking incredible.
It is. It's like this perfect storm that happened. I heard that the reason Masaaki Yuasa picked up the show was because someone on Twitter recommended that he would be a good director for this particular manga. And he wasn't familiar with it ahead of time, and then looked into it and was like, yeah, this would be good. And
then I'm just fucking knocked it out of the park.
Right.
Jesus. I've given every single episode 5 stars. There's not a single, like, every single one is a total banger. Like,
yeah.
It's packed with story, plot, and character. And it layers on itself every single time that recontextualizes the previous episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like I said in my most recent episode, I said it feels like a magic trick. Like, how do you write something this sharply? And I know it's an adaptation, and I can't wait to read the manga, which is not available in English yet. But I just can't believe how good the writing is.
Yeah.
How sharply and succinctly it sums up the creative relationship between animators and producers.
Yeah.
And artists.
Oh, yeah. And puts it in terms that's easy to understand for the audience. The most recent episode, Kanamori basically broke down the production committee system.
Yeah. Here's why this didn't work for us.
We don't have a lot of money, even though people really liked this.
Yeah. It was a huge success. Congratulations, we're broke.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, yep. Yeah, that's that is definitely how that goes. And as sort of a, I don't even want to call it like a beginner class. It's like a master class on like, here's how this production process actually functions. And here's all the fucking headaches you have to put up with. But so long as you have inspired and talented artists who are just enthusiastic and just the only thing they want to do is make. The only thing they want to do is put their hands down and create. You know, you need to temper that with somebody who's there to care about the money.
Right.
But it's fucking perfect.
Yeah. And I like that Katamori, she cares about the money, but she's much more wholesome than what you usually assume the money person is going to be. She's blackmailed a couple people,
But she only blackmails the right people.
Right.
And she's not corrupt.
Right.
Like, she's not corrupt. She cares deeply about the art that they're making and sees real talent and value in it and thinks they have something here.
Yeah, and she fosters relationships with third parties that ends up benefiting them as well. You know, their newest animation that they're going to be working on is going to be for this neighborhood that isn't getting the same sort of tourism or shoppers that it used to. And one of the guys from the neighborhood is on a committee, but he came to their festival and saw their previous show and really liked it. And so she starts frequenting his ramen shop to build the relationship there. And now they have an investment.
Yeah. So people will talk about like Shirobako as like this is the anime that's about anime.
Right.
This is the anime that's about anime.
Right.
I love Shirobako. But it doesn't hold a fucking candle to Eizouken. Like, not a candle. This is perfect. I swear, I've never reacted so strongly to something where I'm like, oh, yeah, you nailed it. Oh, you nailed it. Oh, you nailed it. Oh, you nailed it. Over and over and over and over and over again. Where it feels like perfect chemistry. And you can tell, you can feel so much of Yuasa is in this, like, even though it's an adaptation, like I said, so much of him is in this, and you can see why he would be a perfect person to make this show. You can really see that him and Anyang Choi, perfect team to make this kind of show. So like, it's not over yet, but seriously, there is literally nothing else airing on television anywhere right now that I would recommend more. That if you ever loved a cartoon, if you ever loved animation, you're going to fucking love this. And it's going to teach you something, too.
Yeah.
Like, you learn so much. Because this is one of the things that really got me about the most recent one. They spent so much time just explaining every step of the process that they finally did have a montage of production in the show. They had not had that before.
Yeah.
But you already knew every step. Because you'd been paying attention to the previous episodes.
Yeah.
So they didn't need to explain every step. There's no need to do that. And it in the previous episodes, it was fascinating to watch them explain it. And then this time, I noticed that. It was like, oh, well, I already know all these steps. So they don't need to explain this to me. They don't need to slow it down. They can just keep going.
Right.
And I thought that was really, this is very clever writing.
Yeah.
Very clever.
It's building off the knowledge that the audience should already have because they've already walked you through it.
Yeah, but this is like, it's technical stuff. Like, they go deep into it. But, you know, if you're a cartoon nerd like me, you love that shit. So it's going to help you. Like, it's nourishing.
There are things about the world of Eizouken, too, that aren't explained, but I still really enjoy just picking up on. Like, it's visual interest, I guess. So the entire world is sort of this mishmash of different objects and things that were built together like halfway. It reminds me of that mansion that's in California, the Widock Mansion.
Yeah,
it's sort of like that for an entire city, where it's like, why is this like this? It, you know, someone started something, didn't finish or whatever. So like, for instance, the usual office where all the teachers' desks and stuff are at, are like, it's like in an empty swimming pool. Or when they went to the ramen restaurant, I was listening to what they were saying, but I also noticed there was like a jellyfish tank behind them, and there's just like these jellyfish moving. There's all these little...
Right, and it's also built on an angle. So
right. So they had to like adjust the table or something because it's
Everything's just off enough to be interesting.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So there's just all this visual interest. And there's also, I mean, I think people were really taken with Kanemori at first, but the last couple episodes I feel like have really added to Asakusa, or is it Asakusa? Anyway,
I refer to them as Midori and Tsubame.
Okay, Midori and Tsubame. Let's go with that. Really built on Midori and Tsubame's personalities too. Like I felt like Tsubame was sort of not as quite as fleshed out. We knew that she really was into the physicality of animation and making that look authentic, and that's what she really enjoyed. But the episode that they did about her and her grandmother.
Oh,
like,
man, that was so
I got so
good.
Choked up over that.
It was so good. Yeah, so that episode, specifically, like, they keep throwing the tea out onto the porch, and then when you see their finished animation, that shot is in there.
Yeah, and Tsubame's parents even picked up on it, too.
That
so they
was
knew.
So fucking incredible.
Yeah.
That episode. Because that's, like, that must be, like, artist nirvana.
Yeah.
Yeah, like your parents disapprove of your chosen profession. They disapprove. They think you're wasting your time. And then they come and see what you've made on the big screen. And they're so moved by it that they're like, all right, okay. Well, you're clearly talented. So.
Yeah, don't they frame it like, because they wanted her to be, well, I don't even know if it's they. Her dad wanted her to be an actress for her mother, but I kind of got the impression that the mom wasn't even in on it, the pressure.
Right. Yeah, yes, exactly. And the character dynamics in that are all so interesting. Like, so the mom wanted to be an actress, but wasn't. Dad was like, oh, your daughter then will be an actress and you can live vicariously through her, even though the mom didn't really seem to even want that.
Right.
For her. And
right.
And then it all turns around once they see her art. Once they see her as like, oh, you're an artist.
Yeah.
That was so fulfilling. Like, that was just, like, heartwarming. So, such a good story turn.
Yeah. I feel like, overall, like, the story is just very empathetic towards all kinds of people. You know, like, Kanemori is very different from Midori. But she understands her, and she'll explain, like, oh, she, you know, just needs to do this because that's how she is. And no one seems caught, like, no one seems to, like, judge one another for their eccentricities and how they experience life, which is just really nice.
Yeah. Oh, man. Like I said, man, it's not, I don't think it's, like, really that big a stretch to just boost this one all the way up to number one. I gotta see it through to the end. But I've never responded to a show in the way that I'm responding to this. Exactly this much. Like, I haven't loved anything this much since Devilman Crybaby.
Mm-hmm.
But this is even more close to my heart.
Yeah.
Because it is about the thing that I've dedicated my life to.
And I feel like I probably will rewatch this one more than Devilman Crybaby. They're like, different emotional experiences. Yeah. They're different emotional experiences. And one of them is a little more palatable than the other, you know?
Yeah, Devilman's a little... it's a little
very
hard to watch.
Intense.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, in its own way, so is Aizuken. Like, it is not a put it on in the background kind of show. You have to pay attention to every minute because there's so much plot packed in.
Yeah.
And so much character detail packed in. But yeah, no, it's this is something I could see revisiting over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's like spending time with friends that, like, they love art as much as you do.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. But it's also, like, just as, like, this brilliantly written articulation of the creative process and what goes into making animation, you know, bringing life from your very hands, which is what they're doing. That specific feeling, I've never seen anything like it. It's it's perfect. I have not a single criticism of the show.
wouldn't change a moment of it. I can't.
Yeah, and make sure, if you haven't seen it, the live action video for Easy Breezy is fucking excellent.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's on YouTube, so go check that out.
Yeah, you let me know, because I was trying to figure out, but the music video actually is referenced in a little way in the most recent episode.
In the most,
because Tsubame wears that manta ray costume.
Well, that's not the most recent episode, but
oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, that was the one where they presented their film to the student council.
Oh, right. So it wasn't the most. It was the one right before that.
Right.
Yeah.
And she was wearing a manta ray costume in that, and that is a direct reference to the live action music video, which has Midori's hat in it. It's very much a direct, like, this is about Aizuken. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's really, really good. I haven't seen anything this good in so long.
Yeah, I don't know when we'll get something like it again.
No, I guess we
can just hope that Masaaki Yuasa never gets bored of working at an anime studio, because he hasn't made anything yet that I haven't loved.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm excited. What I'm hoping for is that all the conventions this year don't get canceled, and they show up, and I get to talk to them about it.
Yeah,
like I already got to talk to Anyang Choi, but that interview was supposed to be centered on Ride Your Wave, and so I had to focus on that. I got one question about Aizuken. I hope that they do a big push. That Crunchyroll does a big push.
Yeah,
they do push the show really hard.
It's the best thing on their service right now.
Well,
so.
and also, I think it's a co-production. I can't tell. They advertise it very heavily. And so I'm hoping that either at AX or Crunchyroll Expo, they're going to have Yuasa and Choi there.
Yeah.
And that I get to talk to them about this.
Yeah.
Because, oh, so many questions.
Yeah, yeah.
So many questions. Oh, it's good to have a show you can really hang your hat on and just be like, well, it's a great thing.
Yeah. Do you feel like it'd make a good entry anime too for like people who aren't familiar with it?
So it's hard for me to speak to that because it's a little bit hard for me to put myself in that headspace.
Right.
But
yeah.
I think it's a little bit better for older, you know, beardo anime fans like me, you know.
Yeah.
People who have just been in love with the art form for a really long time.
Yeah.
Or at least a few years or something. Just like, you just feel a deep-seated passion for the art and production of animation.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's a little bit more towards that.
Like a little too technical to be entry level, but...
Well, I don't know. I do think it's very accessible.
Yeah, I feel like it is too. Like, even if you're not familiar with all the industry news about how production works or what the pay rates and stuff are, or you know, the various stages, I feel like the information is presented in a way where if you don't already know it, like you said, you know, you'll learn something and it's not hard to grasp. And I feel like the characters are so likable too that... I don't know, I guess I would try. Maybe I should. I have a friend who's not very big into anime, and I'll recommend it to her and see and get back to you.
No, an experiment.
Yes, I'll do an experiment.
I mean, I would hope that, like, I wouldn't show this to somebody as the, I've never seen anime before.
Yeah, like ever.
Yeah, and then you have to ask, like, the other question you would have to ask is, like, have you ever really loved animation? So, like, tell me your favorite Disney movie.
Right.
You know, and then if they have one, if they have a favorite, and they can tell you literally anything about it other than the plot,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say, like, oh, you should totally watch this show. Like, you have to, you got to dig a little beneath the surface. You do need to be in love with the process of animation.
Yeah.
But,
or at least, like, I don't know, have an artist soul there in you that you can appreciate. Like the characters and how they are also very, very artistic. Like, I feel like even if you're, you know, a perfectionist with your music, you know, you're very, very good at an instrument and the technicalities of an instrument, you might still be able to relate to these characters and their love of animation and the technicalities of that.
Yeah. I mean, like I have shown this to a bunch of friends. Nobody has walked away from it. Even the ones that are like, not necessarily artists, have walked away from it saying, oh, that's fucking good.
Yeah.
this is a good one. So, I mean, it is just a quality show overall. But when I recommend something to somebody, I do that because I think they might fall in love with it the same way that I did.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if someone has literally never seen anime before, maybe not. But if they have and they've enjoyed cartoons in the past,
yeah,
they will probably get a kick out of this.
Yeah.
Maybe they won't fall in love with it in the same way that I did, but they'll definitely get a kick out of it because it's a quality show.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that wraps us up. Thanks, buddy, for dropping on by.
Yeah, I'll see you next time.
Okay, everybody, that's our show. Big thanks to Lindsay for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us wherever you find your podcasts. Leave us comments, you know, whatever. And we'll see you all next week.